This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Today is Sunday, October 4th, 2020. On this day in 1936, the British Union of Fascists violently clashed with anti-fascist organizations in the Battle of Cable Street. Over 150 people were injured in the confrontation. Welcome to Today in True Crime, a Parcast original. Today we're covering the Battle of Cable Street, a violent altercation that broke out after several anti-fascist organizations attempted to stop the British Union of Fascists from marching in London. Now let's go back to the East End on the afternoon of October 4th, 1936. A massive crowd thrummed with anticipation on the streets of Stepney, a predominantly Jewish district in eastern London. People of all stripes stood side by side. Many locals in the throng were pleasantly surprised to see Irish dock workers, the local Communist Party, and members of trade unions all surrounding them in solidarity. It was a rare moment of hope for the Jewish community. Since the end of World War I, anti-Semitism had been on the rise in Western Europe. The Jewish population was unjustly blamed for everything, from economic depression to public immorality. Indeed, anti-Semitism was the driving reason that the British Union of Fascists, or BUF, had scheduled a march in Stepney in the first place. The organization, led by radical fascist Oswald Mosley, wanted to provoke the Jewish community. It was the fourth anniversary of the BUF's creation, and they were determined to spread hate in the streets. But the community refused to let them. Days before October 4th, the Jewish People's Council released a petition signed by 100,000 people urging the city to cancel the scheduled march. The city refused. Not only did they order the demonstration to continue as planned, they mobilized the London Police Division, 7,000 officers, to clear the streets for the BUF that morning. The anti-fascists didn't back down. A coalition of the national Jewish organizations, Communist Party members, and laborers formed to block the streets on the day of the march. Exact numbers are difficult to know for sure, but modern analysts often estimate over 100,000 people showed up to unite against the BUF, also known as the Black Shirts because of their black military-style uniforms. Things were tense from the start. The Young Communist League began by occupying Victoria Park, the location where the fascists planned to hold their rally. Meanwhile, Jewish demonstrators were attacked by police when they refused to disperse. At the entrance to the East End, anti-fascists parked four trams to block the way. As the Black Shirts attempted to march through, they were stopped by a massive crowd. A deafening chorus of voices joined together to chant, "They shall not pass." Thousands of officers soon arrived on horseback and attempted to violently expel the protesters. Despite their brutality, they were unable to stand against the large number of anti-fascists and were eventually forced to retreat. The police then led the BUF to Cable Street so they could commence their march along a separate route. But the protesters had anticipated the change in plans. Barricades had already been erected around Cable Street, making the road almost impassable. Shards of glass, ripped up cobblestone, and marbles littered the pavement to prevent officers on horseback from crossing the border. While police tried to take down the barricades, local residents pelted them with vegetables and other projectiles. Skirmishes between the protesters, the Blackshirts, and the authorities grew more violent until tensions threatened to completely boil over. It soon became clear to police that the march would be impossible. There were simply too many anti-fascists blocking the roads. As the BUF retreated, accompanied by the authorities, what was a battle suddenly became a lively celebration. But the conflict was far from over. Coming up, protesters are punished for standing up to the British Union of Fascists. Hi, listeners. I'm so excited to introduce you to the newest Spotify original from Parcast called Blind Dating. Hosted by YouTuber Tara Michelle, Blind Dating is a fun twist on a classic setup. Strangers are introduced, conversation commences, and sparks either fly or fizzle. But here's the catch. Our hopeful singles have to choose their match before ever seeing their face. And once they've picked their potential date, we turn the cameras on, and then it's either butterflies or goodbyes. Blind Dating airs weekly with new episodes every Wednesday. You can find and follow Blind Dating free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Now, back to the story. On October 4th, 1936, a group of over 100,000 people united to stop the British Union of Fascists from marching in Stepney, a predominantly Jewish district of eastern London. The event is now known as the Battle of Cable Street. As the BUF and their accompanying police were chased away, cheers erupted from the crowd. But for many, the celebration was short-lived. The altercation was violent, and many anti-fascist protesters were injured. Over 100 languished in temporary clinics that were set up in local cafes and shops by the local Communist Party. On top of that, around 85 protesters were arrested during the battle. Meanwhile, only 6 of the Blackshirts, who had violently retaliated against them, were carted off to jail. Bail funds had to be formed with community donations to provide the various anti-fascist groups with legal aid. The money was badly needed, but it often wasn't enough to save the demonstrators from harsh convictions. Some received sentences for hard labor, while others were forced to pay fines for their actions. The city courts clearly intended to make the protesters pay for running the BUF out of the East End. Even worse than these punishments were the public's counter-reaction to the protests. Support for the BUF soared, with nearly 2,000 new members joining following their failure in Stepney. A week after the incident, 200 anti-Semites, largely comprised of young men, tore through the streets of the East End. The mob broke shop windows and brutally targeted the Jewish community. The attack was termed the Mile End Pogrom and became one of Britain's most well-known anti-Jewish riots. The event scandalized many in the local government and influenced the passing of the Public Order Act in 1936, which prevented citizens from wearing political uniforms during marches. These moves and others hurt the appeal of Oswald Mosley, the leader of the BUF. Together with his outrageous rhetoric, his paramilitary-style uniforms were a major aesthetic draw to his organization for many veterans and other fascists. Over the following years, his membership declined as his violent, depraved, and anti-Semitic attitude was exposed again and again. In 1940, the BUF was permanently disbanded. The Battle of Cable Street is remembered as a tremendous victory against the forces of fascism and anti-Semitism. The massive crowd that gathered there to defend Stepney was a rare show of solidarity that gave many new hope in the community. But though the fascists were knocked down that day, they weren't knocked out. During World War II, it took the vigilance and the lives of millions to defeat a poisonous, anti-Semitic ideology. Today, perhaps the best way to thank the brave men and women who stood up against fascism all those years ago is to do the same in our modern era. We must stamp out prejudice and injustice wherever we find it. Thanks for listening to Today in True Crime. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Today in True Crime is a Parcast original. You can find more episodes of Today in True Crime and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Today in True Crime, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Today in True Crime on Spotify, just open the app and type Today in True Crime in the search bar. We'll be back with a brand new episode tomorrow in True Crime. Today in True Crime was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound designed by Juan Borda, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Aaron Larson. This episode of Today in True Crime was written by Terrell Wells, with writing assistance by Abigail Cannon. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Remember to follow Blind Dating for a dash of romance and rejection. YouTuber Tara Michelle hosts, and she's thrilled to help hopeful singles meet their match once they've survived the hot seat. Follow Blind Dating free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.